This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And you are listening to Ecotopia, a weekly program exploring ecosystems, environmental, economic, social, and technological. Tonight, our topic is Green Buddhism, and our guest is Rosemary Roberts, author of a new book, What Would the Buddha Recycle? I'm Susan Chudy.
And I'm Stephen Chudy. Our opening theme was the Diamond Cutter Chant, performed by Mercedes Baleda. Her Buddhist text is a sutra, a key teaching about the hardest and clearest stone, the diamond, a metaphor for the quality of mind required for enlightenment. We want to remind you that Ecotopia is made possible by member contributions and by Greenovation, specializing in energy-focused retrofitting and green building upgrades. They offer in-home energy audits, diagnostic testing, and environmentally friendly products for home improvements. Greenovations can be reached by calling 895-9700 and on the web at green-o-vations.com.
We want to remind you that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. And we will be back with some global stories on Green Buddhism right after this.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, and tonight we're linking Zen and green living. You just heard Forgiveness, performed by Krishna Das. In preparation for our discussion with Rosemary Roberts, author of What Would the Buddha Recycle, we have these global news stories about green Buddhism.
Writing for treehugger.com, a Tokyo writer named Greens JP asks, could a virtual Buddhist temple help save the environment? And this is what he writes. A bunch of young Japanese monks have created a virtual temple online to talk about issues close to their hearts. They are based in Tokyo, where there are surprisingly many Buddhist temples, many as old as the city itself, dating back to the Edo period, 1630 to 1868, before the city started to modernize. They note that no matter how artificial our environment becomes, monks continue to pass on age-old wisdom from master to disciple, inheriting the modes of living, using the temple as its vehicle. Living in harmony with nature is a crucial Buddhist practice. Of course, we can say there are many similarities between early religious thought anywhere in the world, but one case in point is how Buddhism has inspired people to be vegetarians. In 1993, the Japanese Vegetarian Society was formed as a result of concern about animal rights, global environmental issues, third world hunger, and human health. They are eager to face these issues and are working hard, both in Japan and globally. Perennial assumptions about nature's power or to harm human beings have been augmented by a fresh appreciation of humans' power to harm nature. In an early text, the Buddha gives his monks a prayer which reads in part, "My love to the footless, my love to the two-footed, my love to the four-footed, my love to the many-footed. Let not the footless harm me, let not the two-footed harm me, let not the four-footed harm me, let not the many-footed harm me. All sentient beings, all breathing things, creatures without exception, let them see good things, may no evil befall them."
Tree Hugger also tells the story of a Buddhist temple built from beer bottles. Lloyd Alter writes from Toronto, 50 years ago, the Heineken Beer Company looked at reshaping its beer bottle to be useful as a building block. It never happened, so Buddhist monks from Thailand's Sisaket province took matters into their own hands and collected 1 million bottles to build the Wat Pa Maha Chedi Kyu temple. It puts every other bottle building we have known to shame. Even the washrooms and the crematorium are built of bottles, a mix of green Heineken and brown local Chang beer. The pictures of the temple are on the Tree Hugger website. They're really quite spectacular. You can go see them by going to their website, which we will post on our website, ecotopiakzfr.net.
And this from Cambodia. There's an organization in Cambodia of Buddhist monks who wish to protect the environment. Posted on their website are the history, goals, and projects undertaken by the Association of Buddhists for the Environment. The Association of Buddhists for the Environment is an organization that involves monks from 23 provinces in Cambodia working to strengthen the Sangha, that's the community of Buddhist monks and nuns, in its effort to protect the environment. The main goal of ABE is to promote the cleaner and healthier environment as to preserve the natural resources as forestry, wildlife, and aquatic resources. Cambodia is a Buddhist country with over 90% of the population following Buddhist teachings. The pagoda is traditionally the center of community life and learning. After years of suffering under the Khmer Rouge regime, when religion was officially banned, and the subsequent years of civil war, the pagoda is now re-emerging as an important center of village life. At the same time, the state of Cambodia's environment is rapidly declining, due largely to deforestation, hunting, and poor waste management. Based on the strong ecological orientation of Buddhism and the prestige of the monks and the nuns in the community, they can play an important social role in guiding local populations in understanding, protecting, and improving the environment and in exerting moral pressure on those abusing the environment to change their behavior. With this, ABE has implemented two major projects. One is a production of a documentary film on community forestry and monks, and the second one is an environmental education program to include tree planting and home gardening in pagodas and in surrounding communities, as well as to reach out to save national parks, which are threatened by illegal activities such as wildlife hunting and poaching, encroachment, and illegal logging for charcoal production and firewood for domestic consumption for selling.
It will probably not surprise you to learn that the Dalai Lama is concerned about environmental issues. In a story out of Sarnath, Varanasi, India, dated 14 January 2009, he exhorted people to protect and conserve the environment for healthy life. The Dalai Lama also suggested people should follow the spiritual ways for healthy living. Addressing a gathering of devotees and Buddhist monks at the Central Institute of Higher Tibetan Studies, the Dalai Lama expressed his concern over environmental degeneration and said that the uncontrolled material development and exploitation of nature was causing tremendous harm to the environment, particularly the Himalayan environment. "If things remain the same, the ancient rivers will go dry in the near future," he said, and made an appeal to the people not to use plastic. Highlighting the importance of healthy living, the Dalai Lama said that people should give attention to their health. Despite the advances in medical sciences, diseases like AIDS are posing a threat to human life. He added that the self-awareness was essential to the protection of health and environment. Lord Buddha has given special emphasis on protection of trees for environmental conservation, the Dalai Lama said.
And finally, we'll come back to the United States to look at what Buddhists are doing in green living here. This is a quote from Earth Sangha, which is a nonprofit charity based in Washington, D.C., and is devoted to practical environmental action. They work in the spirit of Buddhist practice, but their members and volunteers can come from a wide variety of religious and secular backgrounds. And they are making an effort on their website to pass on the word about practical ways of being a green Buddhist. This is what they say. In our view, environmentally engaged Buddhism and socially engaged Buddhism in general is just a way of living well. Although it receives some academic attention, green Buddhism is not primarily a scholarly enterprise. We see it instead as a natural expression of the Dharma, the formal Buddhist teachings, given the conditions in which humanity now finds itself. If you're uncertain what to make of green Buddhism, they have a webpage that describes it in more detail, but here are two major principles they invoke. First of all, Buddhism is intended to be active, and it is more than meditation. Many people in the West, they say, are drawn to Buddhism because they want to meditate. That's a healthy impulse. We invest so much effort in caring for our bodies, but usually very little effort in caring for our minds. And the Dharma does indeed present meditation as a crucial aspect of mental development, but it does not present meditation as sufficient in itself. So the second principle is this one. At some point in the course of development, the serious student of Buddhism is liable to discover that it no longer makes sense to think of one's practice as purely a personal quest. One ceases to practice just for oneself, and that is when practice really begins. One can begin practice for and with all beings. All beings become the wisdom that practice seeks and expresses. All beings are inexhaustibly marvelous, just as they are, without the perceptual confusion that our own appetites and fears project upon them. This is not some sort of utopian, peaceable kingdom experience. It's not a matter of making friends with pathogens, invasive alien species, or other organisms that humanity, with good reason, is attempting to eradicate or control. Instead, it's a way of experiencing people, trees, birds, fish, mosquitoes, diseases, all beings as at once both themselves and as merging within the entire immense fabric of life, of living and dying, of existence itself. And beyond that, it's a way of experiencing this fabric as that it is constantly weaving and reweaving itself. And beyond that, even, it's a way of seeing that there is no fabric apart from this weaving and reweaving. And beyond that, too, trees are trees and mosquitoes are mosquitoes. We have arrived at green Buddhism. Green Buddhism is merely an effort to act on this process in a practical and systematic way for the benefit of all other species with whom we share this world. And they have one final proposition. Green Buddhism should not confuse gestures or symbols with practical action. And so this organization in Washington, D.C., the Earth Sangha, and we'll post their website on our website, demonstrates the ways that they have taken practical action and invite other people to take practical action to care for the world that they live in.
We'll be back to talk with Rosemary Roberts about what the Buddha might recycle after this.
Gate, Paragate,
This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico, and that was Gone Gone, performed by Geshe Michael Roach and Lama Christy McNally from their Angel of Diamond album. And tonight's Ecotopia program is entitled Green Buddhism.
On the phone with us now is Rosemary Roberts. Rosemary is a social justice activist who has interests in healthcare, patients' rights, domestic violence, and spiritual philosophies. Her new book is called What Would the Buddha Recycle? The Zen of Green Living. Welcome, Rosemary.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
You begin the introduction of your book with a somewhat incredulous question asked on behalf of the reader. So, do I need to be green and learn to incorporate a life of Zen just to become a good human steward of the world? Could you explain that question a little bit? Maybe give us a grounding of the philosophical stance of your book.
I'd be happy to. You know, change is difficult sometimes, and people are striving to see what they can do to be more green in their everyday lifestyle. And those that are not familiar with some of the practices of Zen, I didn't want them to look at this and go, wait a minute, I have to take all this philosophy and add it to all this new stuff about green and be discouraged. So this book is kind of to show... the philosophies of Zen being of right thought and good action and good intention, and how that plays so naturally with being green.
So you entitled the introduction, The Buddha Has Always Been Green.
Right, because...
what do you mean by that?
Well, in Zen, everything is first do no harm. And in living your life, looking at what your impact is on the lives of others. So the Buddha would naturally be green because he has great respect there for our land, our water, our air, and a sense that's driven by a well-being of mind and behavior that doesn't impact negatively on the lives and other living things, whether it's living trees or other animals or fish in the ocean, what have you.
So what made you decide to make this connection between the worlds of green living and Buddhism for a book? You were thinking of book ideas, and how did this come to you?
The publisher of this book is one that I've done several books with in the past, and one of them was on Zen. And they're very proactive in making concepts that are often difficult, people think, into more easily understood. Part of the series that I've done with them in the past was called the 10-minute series. In other words, one of the books I wrote was 10-minute Zen or 10-minute Celtic spirituality. It wasn't meant to suggest that you could understand them in 10 minutes, but it was to break these concepts down into super simple things that people could snag and incorporate into their lives very easily without having to, a lot of people, when they think of Zen, they think, oh, I've got to spend 4 hours a day being a, yogi in meditation. Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
And the concepts of Zen, along with being green, don't require that you go outside of your current religious beliefs or anything else. They're not meant to be dogma.
And I think what you said about making the ideas accessible, even the look of the book is accessible. The cover and the size of the book and the print of the book makes it, I think, very welcoming to read.
I didn't come up with that title, and I would have chosen a different title. The book has so much more besides recycling.
Right.
You know, so yes. I really wanted them to do a different title, but the authors rarely have any real say over it.
I know.
That's been our experience also. We've never had a book come out under our own proposed title. We're also chuckling a little bit. We've decided to go into competition with you, Rosemary. We're coming out with a new book called Power Zen in 5 minutes a day. So
there you go.
We're going to drive you off the shelves.
Hey, that's competition I welcome, you know. I don't consider it competition
at right.
all. There, as you know, when it comes to Zen, there are lots of different degrees in which people argue the points of Zen and who can do Zen and which version of Zen is the real Zen.
Right.
And that kind of stuff makes me nuts because, you know, it to me, if people are doing nothing else but stopping for a minute and thinking about why they do certain things, that's very Zenful, and that adds to a happier world for everybody. So that's always been my big thing is not to have these subjects that can be so easily looked at and take you to a great place be so complicated or restrictive that people are uncomfortable even looking at them because they're just really great, easy ways to look at things.
We're totally sympathetic with that. You're both demystifying Zen and empowering people to take control of it themselves. We're talking in this first part of the interview primarily about the spiritual basis for the book. You use the three main components of earth, ocean, and land, long part of Zen practices. Could you talk a little bit about those elements and how you see them shaping your book?
Well, you know, what I wanted to do was to take those major elements and have people think about how they relate particularly to them. In the book, I kind of outline how everybody has favorite places that they like to be. Some people, their great escape is by the ocean. Others, it's camping deep into the woods. And so if you're someone, for example, who loves the ocean and that's where you like to take your family vacations, ought you not be thinking about what you do in your home that utilizes toxins that get washed down the drain and eventually out to that ocean that you love to visit so much. So I try and bring those connections in because part of our everyday hectic lives, in order to live that way, you have to be disconnected in some sense from other areas of life that you only get to visit once a year on your summer vacation. And I need people to come back to understanding what their everyday practices at home does to that environment where they so enjoy taking their summer vacations.
That's really smart. I like that. If you're just joining us, our guest is Rosemary Roberts, who's written a book called What Would the Buddha Recycle? The Zen of Green Living. You also talk about the Pathway of Eight, and maybe you could talk a little bit about what the Pathway of Eight is, and again, you know, connect those things for us.
Well, I love the Pathway of Eight because, again, Zen is not a religious dogma. It is a way of thinking and acting and responding to the world around you. Some of the pathways, for instance, is right thinking. By the simple act of pondering, am I making the right choice when you're standing in front of the aisle of laundry detergents? You know, instead of going with what you knew before that Tide cleans well.
Okay? Yeah, right, from the ads.
Now you know that while it cleans your clothes nice and white, it may actually be doing harmful things to the environment around you. Once you know that, you cannot unknow that.
Right.
So if you know that certain detergents have phosphates or things that are harmful to the environment, cannot ignore that when you go to purchase products to clean your clothes or clean your dishes in the dishwasher or what have you. By simply stopping and pondering, okay, I know now that this could be a problem. Mm-hmm. That's right thinking. You're pondering what's going to be the best. Right action is actually buying the product that is more safe for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong action is saying, well, I don't care mm-hmm. that it's mm-hmm. hurting the environment. I'm going to buy the Tide anyway because it makes my clothes white. And I'm actually grabbing that brand for no particular reason other than people all know Tide.
Right.
I'm not saying there's things wrong.
Right,
But there are safer ways in which to get white clothes without putting harmful effects on the environment. So it's meant to take you down some of the ways you know things, you think about them. Do you take action that's different based on better intentions? And do you communicate that mm-hmm. to your family members so that they get it and they can start thinking about things themselves? Do you praise companies that do the right thing in their packaging? Mm-hmm. Do you take action to write a letter to those companies that have insane packaging? Mm-hmm. Here's a really good example.
Mm-hmm.
This commercial makes me literally insane because it is a product that has come about at a time when every single piece of information we've learned and we know, it flies in the face of where we need to be.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, my allergies are...
Oh, yeah, it's bad time for allergies.
There's a new pancake product, and as mad as it makes me, honestly, I can't tell you exactly who actually makes it now.
Uh-oh.
There are these commercials out there where there's this little plastic jug that has instant pancake batter mix inside. All you have to do is add water, put the lid back on, shake it up, and pour it into the pan. And how wonderful for mothers out there that they can do this now and make pancakes in a snap. As if without this pure encased jug, that mother wouldn't be able to also pour water-only pancake mix in a bowl and stir it. Now we got to add this other container that once you do it once, you throw it away.
Yes, right.
And it just makes me, one, crazy that they think most mothers are so stupid they wouldn't
yeah, right.
get that. It makes me crazy that there are mothers and fathers who would actually be so lazy as to buy that.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
In my mind, unless you've been totally drugged and asleep for the last few years, you would have a basic concept of the fact that you're adding unnecessary garbage to the landfills and mm-hmm. plastic garbage that's not going to go anywhere for a million mm-hmm. years.
Mm-hmm.
There cannot be an adult today that can tell me they don't get that. So right thinking would mean that you acknowledge that that particular product is just a dumb idea. And right action would be choosing the cardboard box of, oh, I don't know, Pillsbury, you know, just add water pancake mix instead and using a bowl. That's right action. And furthermore, right action would be writing a letter to that company saying, you know, How dare you? You know, how dare you put this kind of a product as an irresponsible corporate practice to introduce this product at a time when this population needs to be thinking and doing better things, making better choices.
Going to the other end of the emotional scale from things that drive you crazy, where does karma fit into becoming green?
Well, Different philosophies all have their own take on karma. Some believe that, you know, karma is just plain and simply cause and effect. Everything you do has a cause, good or bad, and an effect, good or bad. What you put out there will come back to you. And some actually believe that it's more the intention behind an action that carries the weight of positive or negative cause and effect. And I kind of tend to lean that way. I think sometimes people do things that are wrong, that they don't really know are wrong, and can't in that aspect be held, you know, sorely accountable for it. But it's more so when you are not aware. Sorry, this other phone's ringing. I want to get away from it. That karma plays an effect, and so, you know, it's a matter of taking responsibility in the philosophy of Zen, taking responsibility for your own thoughts, your own actions, your own decisions. Obviously, in a Zen philosophy where karma is related to going green, if you, with all you hear on the nightly news and all you read and your kids coming home from school talking about good things for the environment, if you go and you buy that pancake mix that you shake in a jug, you know, there's repercussions there. And you may not feel it personally today, but at some point, the planet will feel it. At some point, that will affect you. It will affect your kids, your great-grandkids, and their kids, you know, what have you. So if with intention you dismiss what you know and do something that you know is going to be harmful to the earth, the oceans, the air, and all living creatures, be it human or not, you know, that's where karma plays a role.
Okay. We need to take a short break. We're talking with Rosemary Roberts, author of What Would the Buddha Recycle? We'll be back with her in just a few minutes.
90.1 FM KCFR Spring Membership Drive starts April 20th. We need your support.
Yes, we can!
April 20th through the 29th, the KZFR Membership Drive. Support local radio.
Yes, we can!
Yes, we can!
Yes, we can! It's an opportunity and prosperity.
Don't miss our big Earth Day celebration Wednesday, April 22nd on the City Plaza in downtown Chico. Steve O'Brien will do Kelt Radio Live. Be there. Make your pledge. Wednesday, April 22nd, Earth Day. Be a part of KZFR's 2009 Spring Membership Drive. From 90.1 FM KZFR, your community radio station.
And it's homage to the creation force of the universe, and it's by Girish from the Shiva Machine. And this is Ecotopia on KZFR. We are talking with Rosemary Roberts, author of What Would the Buddha Recycle? The Zen of Green Living. In the first part of the program, we talked mostly about the spiritual and philosophical underpinnings of your book, that green is the color of enlightenment. In this next part, let's talk a little bit about concrete applications in daily life. And you talked a little bit about that already. You know, it's stupid to buy a plastic container that you're just going to throw away. And we should be choosing things that are healthier for the environment. And you really cover so much in your book. just about every aspect of living, it seems, from cleaning products to eating to decorating to entertaining to child care and pet care. Can you tell us a little bit about how you conducted your research on all these aspects of green living?
Well, I think there's so much information out there in independent sources now. There's the Everything Green Living book, which is also published by Adams Media, is great. There are HGTV. I have a remodel coming up. I watch a lot of HGTV.
Oh, interesting.
They have green shows on now.
Interesting.
That are great. I have learned a lot there. People, I have girlfriends who clean till the cows come home.
Mm-hmm.
I have other friends who love entertaining. I have friends who do a lot with their kids and really go all out at holidays, you know. So I wanted to try and incorporate as much as I could on different areas that appeal to people's pleasure and how they can work that way. I think any time you can take a subject and relate it to where people's passion flow from and find ways that they can incorporate this type of thinking and behavior and act as their own little mini, you know, protectors of the world,
right.
You're going to get a lot more favorable response. So,
what advice do you give your readers that you think is most helpful to people? Maybe ways of getting started or other crucial steps that people could take to get rolling on the program?
Well, I think that's a huge aspect. You know, the book starts out, and I think I tried to make the point again and again and again in different ways and in different chapters that it's not about being perfect. It's not about doing this huge green transformation overnight. We're creatures of habit, and we have to start someplace. Very small measures can make huge impact. And once you start, you know, taking a look at every aspect of your life, be it your home, your work, your way, means of travel, your means of gardening, you can begin to find small ways in which you can make a substantial difference, actually save a ton of money in the process, not spending so much more, and not get hung up on a lot of things. In my remodel, there are a great number of products that would be really great to use. Some of them are beyond my price range.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody can afford to throw a solar panel set on their roof.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody can spend $40,000 on a new hybrid car.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a great many smaller things that you can do day in and day out that are wonderful implements of being zenful and green.
Well, what advice do you have that might meet most resistance from your readers?
You know, my first instinct is to say cost, but I think that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have been consumers of convenience, and I think that has driven the majority of our choices in life. Let's be real. If the manufacturer of the pancake mix in a plastic jug didn't think that there was a market out there, they would never spend the money putting that together. But they believe and have data supporting that there is a market of consumers who will spend the extra money and buy that junk and make it. And that's a sad reality. So I would say that sometimes being green and doing healthful things is less convenient. It's less convenient to cook at home versus drive through McDonald's. And people know this. And they know that it's healthier if they do cook at home.
Right.
But it's more convenient there.
Right.
So I think to start out, people have to find things that they can do that resolve that issue for them. And be educated to the point to where the added inconvenience, perhaps, at times, of being green is worth it.
Right.
Because living a convenient life, I think, is leading to our planet's peril. It's leading to the dysfunction and breakdown in health for humans.
Right.
And touching all aspects of our lives. How much are we missing out on in the long run because we're taking the convenient road? So,
well, in the food issues, too, this is one of the ones that I always get upset about, because really fast food is not good for your body. And it's cheap and it's easy. And so even though people know that it's not good for your body, yeah, they just continue to do it. And cooking at home is more time consuming. But I think that we've also just changed our habits, which have sort of changed our values. And I think that we might be happy. We've gone back to a lot more cooking at home and with our family. And it's a really happy time. We really enjoy it. So
I don't know where I would have been with my son growing up if I didn't make dinner, if we did not have dinner together.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
I was always astonished at how surprised his friends are
yep.
that we ate dinner, or that I made homemade macaroni and cheese, or that I made cornbread in an iron skillet, or whatever. And it just always cracked me up. So, you know, while everybody's quick to, you know, grab the McDonald's and go on with it, you know, the loss there is the conversations that right. happen over 20 minutes at the dinner table with your kids. And people, I think, just don't understand what they sacrifice there. It's not only the nutritional value. I can make chicken tortilla soup in 8 minutes in my Vitamix. And
nice.
It's healthy and fresh.
Right.
And that takes me longer to drive to Burger King.
Right, right.
And you have to prep and shop for it.
So. Right. Yeah, you have to be, yeah. And it requires a little planning ahead. But that
right.
segues into my next question. You talk in the book about rearing mindful children. You have a whole section on childcare products and toys and that sort of thing. But you also talk about rearing mindful children. And I wonder what advice you can pass on from your direct experience and from your research about helping children be more attentive to the things that we're talking about.
Well, I think there's a plethora of programs out there for children, for one thing, science education programs that instead of always, you know, instead of an afternoon at the, you know, skate park, you know, take a short trip to your community's, you know, science fair or you know, your park and recreational district that has a program a day on certain things. Get your kids involved with those kind of programs. They're out there, and they're plentiful, they're inexpensive, and they'll learn something, and you'll learn something. I'm also really big in helping them evaluate what they contribute to pollution. Right now, kids are all into the various high-tech toys out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there's a reason why you can't just throw them in the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
But kids aren't always told about what's inside these products that make them dangerous if they're not disposed of properly. Get them involved with that. You know, make sure that they are responsible to your family and their environment by helping them take that old computer to the right place to dispose of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's example, yeah. example, example, example of
yeah,
life,
right.
example of living, example of all these things.
Right.
As parents, we're often very hypocritical.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And kids are coming home from school teaching us.
Right, right, yeah.
Which is great.
That's been, yeah, that's
and,
good.
And I think the biggest thing is living by example and practicing what you're teaching, but listen to what your kids can teach you, because they are really on the forefront.
That's great. That's really nice. I wondered if you learned anything in the process of writing this book or in doing your research on, you know, when we're not doing green living, that you found worrisome or unsettling.
Well, I think the unsettling part for me was in some books that I've researched for their thoughts on different things, and I find that sometimes my biggest problem is extremes.
Mm-hmm.
You'll pick up a book on green living, and it will incorporate big things that are extreme, like extreme some people, you have to be a vegetarian, you know?
Yeah, right.
If you're not a vegetarian, well, you are. What are you, you
yeah,
know?
Right.
And I think that that's taking judgment to a whole new area.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe it's healthy to eat grass-fed beef, not your regular beef at the grocery store, because I think that it's totally unhealthy what goes into that.
Right.
I understand the argument about the emissions from the absolute insane load of cow manure out there and what it does to the planet. I think that we ought to be working on a way to harness that in some
right.
way.
Mm-hmm.
But I also believe that from a genetic and hereditary standpoint, there are some people who absolutely do need beef in their diet.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think you get nowhere by having these extreme rules,
mm-hmm.
Because people are not going to follow them,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I think that the most unsettling to me was the extremes from that standpoint that can turn people off. There's a lot to be said by you know, I want people to do what they can. When you know better, you do better. I want
right.
them to acknowledge mm-hmm. and do what they can within their world.
So I'm wondering how you changed. It sounds like you've always been a very mindful living person, but if there were things that you've discovered or that you started to care more about as you were writing this book.
Well, I mean, certainly in doing some of the research for this book, there's a lot of things that every time I would trip over something, I go, oh my gosh, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
I could do that. Again, I'm doing a remodeling. So now mm-hmm. I've been on a really, heavy, research on who's got products locally
right.
that I can get, that I can incorporate in within my budget.
Right.
And, you know, there's lots of things that I do that I dedicated this book to my grandmother. She always had a huge garden. Mm-hmm. She always had a humongous compost pile.
Mm-hmm.
She never threw out anything. She got everything out of every piece of product, every piece of food scrap, you name it, she got it. And
nice.
I started realizing how much she was so ahead of the game before it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, our grandparents came from an era when you had to make everything
right.
go the distance. And I think there are so many great lessons in that that have been lost and are coming back.
Yep.
In my own gardens, now I live in a rural community, but I live in the old town part of it. Our lots are a little bigger in town than what some of the suburbs are. But still, I have a decent-sized garden of flowers and vegetables. I have a goose in my garden.
Aww.
And because I just have one goose, he is not noisy. He doesn't bother anybody.
He doesn't eat everything.
Geese and ducks don't mess up your plants like a chicken will scratch it up.
Mm-hmm.
What's this flower plant doing here? We'll get rid of that. Ducks and geese don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But what they do is eat the bugs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to put 7 powder on my mm-hmm. tomatoes to get rid of worms. The goose takes care of that.
Nice.
Out in my gardens, goose manure just sort of evaporates in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I never see it.
Mm-hmm.
I do that. If I have to buy spinach at my local grocery store, the organic spinach only comes in those clear plastic shoebox-looking things.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So I have a problem with that kind of packaging,
yep. mm-hmm.
you know. But what I do is I use those again and again and again. Mm-hmm. Every pair of shoes I own is in one of them.
Wow.
The benefit is I'm reusing them. They're not going in the garbage. And when I open my closet, I can actually see the different shoes that I have
mm-hmm.
and choose one. Instead of forgetting about this pair because it's been buried under 4 other shoe boxes. So I reuse things like that. I reuse my evaporative cooler water pads in my garden everywhere. I put them in baskets to plant things
yes.
instead
uh-huh.
of buying moss. So I reuse a lot of things. I make a lot of my garden things. I have a 2-tier waterfall that's actually made from 2 beauty salon sinks, you know, with the cutouts for your neck.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, I make a lot of things. Your junk is my garden design. So,
nice.
You know, there's things like that. But I tell you, once you get into some simple things, which again is why I wanted to make this book simple with lots of simple ideas. Because you can get the big picture, but you can also find things you would never think about doing to enhance your holidays, to enhance your family's everyday life, that are good for the community, that are inexpensive, and that you can get your kids involved in. Instead of stringing up a bunch of electric lights, have your kids and make it a family day thing to put out. Maybe, you know, small paper sacks that have a little candle and some sand in them, things that can be reused or recycled, and light them at night instead of, you know, for one night, instead of a month long of colored lights everywhere.
As our listeners can sense, Rosemary's book is filled with similar kinds of good ideas. We want to thank you for being with us tonight. Rosemary is the author of What Would the Buddha Recycle? It's published by Adams Media of Avon, Massachusetts. We checked this morning. As of this morning, Amazon had just one copy left, but promises that more are on the way. Thank you very much for being with us, Rosemary.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you. Good night.
Chondroma, performed by Mercedes Baleda from her Path to Bliss album. Chondroma is an enlightened angelic being, and the language is Tibetan. This is Ecotopia on KZFR. Tonight we're talking about green Buddhism. We have a couple of announcements for listeners. On this coming Saturday, April 18th, 2 to 5 p.m., you can participate in a nationwide town hall on a just and clean energy future. This is being sponsored by Butte College, CSU Chico, the cities of Oroville, Chico, Paradise, and some other local organizations. It'll be held at three different locations, 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock, in Oroville at City Council Chambers, in Chico also at City Council Chambers, in Paradise at the Terry Ash Recreation Center on Skyway. At 2 o'clock, there'll be an opening by representatives of the colleges and the mayor of each respective city or town. There will be a review of local, state, and national government response to global warming. There will be a webcast. A guest speaker is Yvonne Hunter, the California Institute for Local Government. And there will be small group discussions to involve citizens in finding solutions and decision-making. If you want more information about those town halls, you can contact Kelly Munson at Butte College. She's at 530-895-2945. And we also want to tell you that the Museum of Anthropology at CSU is presenting its 25th annual American Visions Photography Juried Exhibition, and contributors are invited. The theme for the exhibit is Going Green. As more people try to account for their carbon footprint, where do you stand on the green path? Beyond preserving the planet, green simply brings one back to summer days, lush forests, new growth, and verdant landscapes. You can show the judges your vision of going green, whether it be bicycles, solar panels, or the backyard garden. The deadline for submission of photographs is Friday, May 8th. The fee is $25 for every 3 images submitted, with a limit of 9 images altogether. The exhibition itself, selected prints, will be displayed from September 8th through 27th in Kendall Hall on campus. And there's a prize of $500, an award for excellence in visual anthropology given to Best in Show. There will also be honorable mentions. If you're interested in learning more, contact Adrian Scott, the museum curator, 898-5397. And we also, of course, want to tell you that Adrian will be here in just a few minutes with the Storyteller. Are you ready for a trip around the world? Tune in to the Storyteller at 7 o'clock on KZFR and journey to places near and far. And then at 7:30, we'll have All Mixed Up with Mark, Mike, and Jeff, bringing you 2.5 hours of rock and pop from the edges of mainstream and contemporary music.
And we want to remind you that Ecotopia is made possible by member contributions, thank you so much, and by Greenovations. Based in Chico, Greenovations specializes in energy-focused retrofitting and green building upgrades. They offer in-home energy audits, diagnostic testing, and environmentally friendly products for home improvements. Greenovations can be reached by calling 895-9700 and on the web at green-o-vations.com. And this is Ecotopia for tonight. We hope you found this